And now for something completely different.
It's a rich man's world. Forget everything you've been told by others before. Get ready for the real deal. The full story. Real talk about money, markets, life. Now, it's The Real Investment Show with Lance Roberts. Presented by RIA Advisors.
Hey, good morning. It's 6:06 on this Monday as we get... Can you believe that next week is Thanksgiving?
Yeah, baby.
I know, right? It's like my wife's making the list, checking it twice and for Thanksgiving dinner. It's going to be interesting. So we have one person in our family, one person that's vegetarian.
Really?
Yeah, one person.
Who is that?
Oh, it's just one of our cousins.
Extended family.
Yeah, well, extended family. Okay. Yeah, so, yeah. You know, every year we all get together as a family, right? Traditional Thanksgiving. Yeah. Everybody gets together. And so my wife's reading off to me the menu that everybody's doing their thing. You know, we always we always wind up bringing all the meat, right? So the turkey, the ham, the brisket, right? Because I'm not a big turkey fan. You a big turkey fan?
Moderately.
Yeah, see, I'm not.
It's got to be smoked.
Yeah, you know, that's true. But yeah, the traditional turkey thing, it's not really me. Yeah. So we always have a different one. But, you know, it's interesting. We have one person in our family that's vegan. So she's reading me off the menu yesterday. And it's like, okay, we've got the turkey, the ham, and the brisket, right? And then about 15 other things are all vegan.
Right.
And I'm like, we have all this vegan food for one person.
Bring them some Merits.
I know, right? Exactly. Merits, if you don't know, by the way, are the new Arby's-based meat carrot. So we've got Beyond Meat, right? So now we need Merits.
We are now a true meritocracy.
Exactly. So anyway, so this weekend I tweeted out a picture. I made fun of my wife. On the show here, I guess, about a month
ago.
Or so ago. No,
yeah.
It's about once a week.
It's been a
this particular joke was about how I had to drive all the way across Houston to pick up this 12-foot artificial Christmas tree from something she found on Facebook. And so it's this 12-foot Christmas tree. We went to get this thing, right? The lights don't work. It's all beat to hell. It's all like in four different directions. It looks like crap. I mean, and you know, it's $75. I'm like, honey, she goes, you know how much these trees cost? Like if you go buy a new artificial 12-foot tree,
she's right.
They are very expensive. Yeah. I looked it up. And so she bought this tree for $75. She's like, trust me, this is going to be beautiful. It's going to be great. And I'm like, okay, so we pay this lady $75. I cram it in the back of the truck, and you know, we bring it home, and she sets this thing up in the living room. So we've had a Christmas tree in our house now since before Halloween. So she's set this tree up, like the needles are falling off of it. I'm like, this is terrible. You know, this is like Charlie Brown's Christmas tree in my living room. So she decorated it over the weekend. Mm. I was wrong. I can admit when I'm wrong, and I was wrong. It turned out to be a gorgeous tree, which just goes to show you.
Magnificent.
It's magnificent. And when Brent, I guess you'll put the picture up on the, when we do our live stream today.
Yeah.
So if you go watch our live stream after the show today, you'll see a picture of the tree. I took a picture of it and posted it out on Twitter. But yeah, I was wrong, and I can admit it. She was right. So it just goes to show you that never judge a book by its cover.
Yeah.
Right? So.
Or a tree by its price tag.
Or by the way it looks when you pick it up. Because, I mean, this is like Little Orphan Annie of the Christmas tree.
Now, so. Do you farm your wife out for this service to other houses?
No, but I'm sure that this is probably a business for her now. Mm-hmm. So buy cheap Christmas trees and make it. It was funny, though, because my daughter brought her boyfriend over, and they were all decorating the tree. And I'm like, Jesus, is gonna, you know. anyway, but it turned out really well. So a couple of things today we've got to get into. We talked a little bit about debts and deficits this morning. As the economy continues to grow, we are continuing to run up record levels of debts and deficits. And there were some comments from Jerome Powell last week saying that, well, maybe, you know, government should start thinking about the debt and what we're about to pass on to our children. So it was an interesting point. We'll talk about that. Very quickly, though, the markets did rally on Friday, and we talked about in this weekend's newsletter. So if you go by our website, realinvestmentadvice.com, click on the newsletter link, you'll get our latest newsletter. And we talked about this move on Friday. Again, more trade talk. Will we get it done? Will we not get it done? But also, this has really been, this advance, which has been very sharp here as of late, has really been a function of the Fed's QE and what the Fed's been doing in terms of expanding their balance sheet at the fastest clip, actually a faster clip than they actually were doing the expansion of their balance sheet during QE1. So that liquidity hitting the market, driving stocks higher, this is good in the short term. The problem, though, is this extension that we currently see between the markets and longer-term moving averages is extremely deviated currently and has typically been a setup for at least a short-term correction. So we talked about in this weekend's newsletter about why we're hedging portfolios, why we're taking some defensive action here. But also, too, if you take a look at our overbought conditions of the markets, we are now more extended, more overbought on a short-term basis than really at any other point in the last decade. This is even a particular case on a monthly basis, our overbought indicator is now higher than it was at any other point in the last 15 years. So, you know, going back, this is a very, very extended market on a monthly basis, weekly basis, you know, obviously also very overbought. These things, and all this means is that the conditions are now set up for at least a correction in the short term. And when these things reverse, they tend to reverse fairly quickly. Now, we're not talking about a major correction here. We're not talking about a major crash, nothing to go run off and sell everything and buy cash, gold, and beanie weenies. But you are probably looking at a 5 to 6% correction coming within the next month or so, if that long. So again, these things can turn up fairly quickly. All you need is one set of bad news or one event that occurs globally that can kind of set off a chain reaction in markets. But when things are this extended and this overbought, you tend to get a pullback in price. And that would probably take us back, you know, again, 4, 5, 6% just to get now back to moving averages and previous breakout support levels is a decent correction. So again, kind of pay attention to what's going on with your money. If you've got a lot of risk here, you might want to take a little bit off the table and just rebalance some. Think about, you know, just protecting what you've made this year, particularly as we get ready to go in the end of the year. And most importantly, strictly as we go into Thanksgiving and then coming out of Thanksgiving, we have mutual funds that have to rebalance, distribute capital gains, dividends, and interest. And that always puts a little bit of pressure on markets here before Christmas. So doesn't mean we can't, you know, still have a Santa Claus rally in the end of the year. That's very likely, but we're likely going to have a correction first. So just pay attention to your money. That's what we always talk about here. When we come back from the break, we'll talk about the Fed, Jerome Powell, and what he said about debts and deficits. Don't go away.
Go hungry, you can see every double tries to stop. Rocking around the Christmas tree, let the Christmas spirit ring. Later we'll have some pumpkin pie and we'll do some caroling.
Real Investment Show podcasts are now available on iTunes.
Listen anyplace, anytime
at iTunes.com.
2019 is drawing to a close. Get ready for a successful 2020 with RIA Advisor's free financial planning tool, MyBlocks. It's our online modular manager for your money and your life. Does your vision of retirement match up to reality? MyBlocks can help to determine how much you'll need and how you can achieve it. What worries you about your money? Create your own personal financial vision for the next decade with MyBlocks, our free tool at RIAAdvisors.com. Click on the client portal tab, RIAAdvisors.com.
Welcome back at 6:17 as we get this Monday's edition of the Real Investment Show underway. I'm actually in the process of writing. I'm having an article on this on probably Thursday. But last week, Jerome Powell was giving his congressional testimony. And what happens is every so often, the Federal Reserve Chairman provides testimony in front of the Senate Banking Committee, the Congressional House on Finances, blah, blah, blah. There's multiples of these that go on. Jerome Powell's constantly having to tell Congress what he's up to because apparently they don't know. Not that they shouldn't know, I guess, but, you know,
I was going to say not that they would understand.
Yeah, but, well, that I think that maybe that's more accurate, right?
But anyway, so he's in front of he's in front of Congress giving this testimony, and he says a very interesting thing. Now, this completely flew past the rest of the markets and really the world. Nobody really paid attention to it because, well, stocks are up, so that's good, right? But he says that at some point, the Federal Reserve needs to pass the baton, so to speak, from monetary policy over to fiscal policy. In other words, the government needs to take control of the economy and what they're doing. And importantly, he says that the debt and the deficits are something that Congress needs to pay attention to, because we are potentially setting up a bad environment for our children down the road, and that they're going to be burdened by these high levels of debt. Now, if you didn't know, we just blew through $23 trillion worth of debt. Like, that line wasn't even there. It was we had a $680 billion increase in a month. And this is now pushing us right up to a $1 trillion deficit. And this will expand next year. Excuse me. And this is exactly what I wrote about in January, March, June of 2018. When we were passing tax cuts, I said, be careful with passing these tax cuts. They won't increase governmental revenue. In fact, they'll reduce revenue to the government. And this is contrary to what we were being told at the time, that by cutting taxes, we'd have all this capital investment and that it would create more revenue, it would boost economic growth, and this would all lead to higher revenues for the government, right? So we'd have lower taxes, but higher revenue. Isn't it a wonderful environment? Problem is it doesn't happen that way. And particularly the fact that when this was sold to taxpayers, hey, let's cut corporate taxes, this was done on the back of this idea that, well, Reagan did it and it worked, so if we do it, it should work again. The problem was is Reagan cut taxes coming right out of major double back-to-back recessions. Inflation and interest rates were running 12, 13% at the time. And they were falling. So you had this big economic tailwind that made it appear as if tax cuts actually provided economic stimulus. It actually doesn't. And that's what we saw in the course of the last 2 years. Corporate revenue has exploded because they're paying lower tax rates. Federal Express is a good example of this. They paid $1.5 billion in taxes prior to tax cuts. They paid zero in taxes last year. So it's been a great boon for corporate earnings, but where'd that money go? It didn't go into capital investment. It didn't go into building out property, plant, equipment, et cetera. Went into things like stock buybacks. It went into cash piles, et cetera. The top seven companies, Apple, Microsoft, Google, you know the companies, the top seven, have more cash than the entirety of the financial market combined. So, you know, it's definitely benefited. Tax cuts definitely benefited corporations. They did very well with this, but it didn't lead to the economic prosperity that everybody wanted. And as such, debt has continued to increase. And we have now blown through $23 trillion. And as I wrote about in early 2018, I said this is going to lead us to a $1 trillion deficit by the end of 2019. And here we are. We have a $1 trillion deficit. But it's an interesting point that Jerome Powell makes, because he says that, well, if we don't do something about the debt, you know, this is going to impede the economic and financial prosperity of our children. And this is something that we've always talked about, right? When Barack Obama was president and he was in office, the Republicans and the GOP were ranting and raving about him doubling the national debt. And even Donald Trump himself came out in 2016, when he was running for president. He said, you know, the debt is a national security issue, right? Running a $1 trillion deficit is a national security issue. We've got to do something about that. The GOP were running around waving their arms and hands about the demise of the American economy because of Barack Obama doubling the national debt. It's unprecedented. Of course, Barack Obama also went after George Bush in 2007. Then Senator Barack Obama made the comment that George Bush was unpatriotic for adding $9 trillion to the national debt. So they all talk a good game. Whether you're Republican or Democrat, doesn't matter. We all talk it's a great game about the debt and the deficits, and boy, we got to get it under control and got to stop this, you know, deficit spending. Until you get elected, and then once you're elected, well, then it just doesn't matter anymore. We continue to run up the debts and the deficits, and we say it's a good thing now. It's a good thing now that we're running up the debt and the deficit because, you know, we've got low unemployment rates. So, hey, no problem. We can have more, you know, even Donald Trump coming out, we need negative interest rates like Europe because we've got low inflation. You might want to ask the average American exactly what their inflation rate is, because it's not low. Food, cost of living is rising faster than wages, and that's a problem. This is why household debt continues to register up to records, because they're having to supplant incomes just to make ends meet with credit card debt. About $2,800 a year is the gap between the average cost of living and what's required in terms of income to make up the difference. So that has to go into debt. And this all has consequences. You know, the consequences are ultimately that debt is a deterrent for economic growth. Why does debt deter economic growth? This is an important concept. There's two types of debt. There is what's called productive debt, and there is what is called unproductive debt. What is productive debt? How can debt be productive, right? We hear about all the evils of debt, right? Debt's bad. You know, Dave Ramsey, he's on the radio every day talking about get rid of all your debt. Debt's evil. The borrower is a slave to the lender. It's in the Bible, right? So all debt's bad. It's not, for most people, yes, debt is bad. But there is what's called productive debt and there's what's called non-productive debt. Productive debt is something when I use debt to create something that generates wealth. As an example, I borrow money to build a retail strip center. Right? So I can go out, I can buy a piece of property for just round numbers, just throw out some numbers here. I buy a piece of property for $1 million, right? I own the property, I have $1 million in this property, and I'm going to put a retail strip center on it. So I go to the bank and I can borrow money to build a strip center. So maybe I've got 20% of my own capital in this, I've got 80% financing from the bank, or some magic mix of numbers, right? Just an example. Don't start emailing me what the appropriate leverage ratios are. Just an example. Just follow along here. The point is that I can build a piece of property. I can create a revenue stream. I have an asset. And then at some point, I can sell that asset for more money than I actually have in it. I pay back the bank and I make a profit. And that is productive debt. That happens all the time. Unproductive debt. Spending money on a credit card to buy food. That is non-productive debt because I consume the food, it's gone, and there is no repayment down the road. Spending debt on things that do not produce an income stream or an increase in value over time is unproductive debt. The majority of the debt that we spend from the government is unproductive debt. 97 cents of every tax dollar that comes in simply covers the cost of Social Security, Medicare, prescription drug benefits, and interest on the debt. Everything else that we do, whether it's the Department of Education, the Department of Energy, all this other nonsense that we have going on in Washington, that is all funded out of debt. And it is unproductive. It does not create an income stream. It does not repay for it. It does not pay for itself over time. It does not create an ongoing stream of income after the debt is being paid. And the government has a history of making productive investments. Tennessee River Valley Authority, the Hoover Dam. It changed the dynamics of Regions and created an income stream that has lasted for decades. It is more than it paid for itself. That is productive debt. The government believes that we should just spend money. Let's give more money to things that are free. Let's give people free college. Let's give people free health care. Let's give people free housing. And this is somehow all going to magically inure to itself to create better economic prosperity over time. It doesn't. As an example, let's take out debt and let's give everybody $1,000. Yes, you will immediately have a bump in the economy because everybody will go out and spend the $1,000. The problem is that now the entire economy comes up to expect this $1,000 worth of spending to occur, let's say it's $1,000 a month every month, that's going to come up. The entire economy, inflation, is going to come up to meet that $1,000 increase that the economy knows is coming. So immediately the economy adjusts up and wipes out the entire benefit of that $1,000. So now you've got to do $2,000, $3,000, $4,000. It goes on and on and on. You create a very short-term bump by giving people money. What you have to do is provide a productive incentive. And using debt productively can create economic prosperity. But unfortunately, our entire government is based upon unproductive investments. Be right back after the break.
Get daily investment news you can use, delivered at the speed of the internet. Sign up for the Real Investment Report now at realinvestmentadvice.com.
2019 is drawing to a close. Get ready for a successful 2020 with our RIA advisor's free financial planning tool, MyBlocks. It's our online modular manager for your money and your life. Does your vision of retirement match up to reality? MyBlocks can help to determine how much you'll need and how you can achieve. What worries you about your money? Create your own personal financial vision for the next decade with MyBlocks, our free tool at RIAAdvisors.com. Click on the Client Portal tab, RIAAdvisors.com.
And welcome back to the show this morning at 6:33 as we kind of get the day underway. You know, this weekend I had notified all the public media that I'd be making an appearance, and they all agreed to show up, and then I decided at the last minute that I was going to move it somewhere else and didn't tell anybody.
How'd that work out for you?
Nobody showed up.
You think?
Russell, I need your help here for a second, buddy. Can you explain to me what, I mean, look, Colin Kaepernick, I mean, you know, love him, hate him, whatever, you know, you have an opportunity to maybe get back in the NFL. Everybody agrees to show up to the Atlanta Falcons stadium to watch you have a workout, and then you decide to pull it and move it somewhere else. How does this work out well for you?
Not very well.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
I mean, can you explain to me what he was thinking? I mean, you know, he said he wanted it open, so the
he wanted transparency.
Yeah. Who cares? You're trying out for a football team.
And the funny thing is that over half the teams wind up not showing up because of his change.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, you've coached sports. I've coached sports. If you've got a team player who's not a team player, do you want him on your team?
You're not playing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's you know, he was already disruptive. The reason he's out of the NFL is because he was disruptive to begin with. And now you pull this stunt. If I'm a coach, I'm going, I got plenty of other choices to choose from. I don't need this.
I'll agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah. He's not getting any older. What, he's like, what, 34?
He's 32, 33.
Yeah. I mean, your time frame for playing in the NFL is rapidly running out.
Hasn't played in, what, 3 years now?
Exactly. So that may be the end of his clock right there. I'm not quite sure. I was trying to understand the mentality of this weekend. Why on earth here? You know, first of all, your ability to play in the NFL, let's put this out there, right, is probably less than 1%. If you play football, your odds of getting in the NFL are probably less than 1%. And if you do get there, the odds of you playing are even still pretty stretched. And to have an opportunity where it was 28 teams, Russell, is that right?
Yes.
It was 28 teams.
It was
showed
either 23 up? Or 28 teams that were going to show up. And once he made the change, only 8 of them showed.
Yeah. And I'm like, you know, look, you've got 23, 28 teams showing up to watch you. I mean, that amazed me. I was surprised that there were that many people even interested in him at this point after 3 years being out. And then to pull that stunt, I was like, what on earth are you thinking? I thought the funniest thing, did you hear about the guy that was standing in front of the stadium?
No.
Okay, so there's a guy in front of the stadium. He's out in front waving this American flag, right? And so the press goes up to him and they go, "Are you here to protest Colin Kaepernick?" And he says, "No, I'm just here waving this big old American flag."
Yeah.
I'm like, "You go, man. That's awesome."
That is.
So anyway, yeah, but that's, I appreciate your help this morning. I was trying to wrap my head around that this weekend.
You can't pick stupid, Lance.
Well, yeah, I can't disagree. It's so sad. It's so sad. Anyway. I mean, you know, I just think about, you know, when you have opportunities in life, and there are a few people that get these amazing opportunities. Think about, you know, it's professional sports figures, right? So you have this opportunity to play in the NFL, the NBA, the Major League Baseball, and get paid millions of dollars to play a game. Your life is not bad, right? Even if you're the guy that's on the third string, sitting on the bench, never get to see, you know, any time on the field, you still don't get paid too bad just to sit there and hang out. It's a rare opportunity. And you think about people that are in the you know, Hollywood, right? Making movies. And how hard is your life? Honestly, you make a movie. And you get paid a lot to make movies. And so we talk about these opportunities. And, you know, it's amazing to me is that there are millions of people who get up every day and they work hard and, you know, they do what they've got to do to take care of their families and do these things. And yet there's these few people that have this amazing opportunity to make all this wealth, and they are total screw-ups. You know, it just you know, flabbergasts me. And Colin Kaepernick is such a great example of this. Who cares about you? Look, you play professional sports. You're there on the field, and whether you like it or not, you're there to provide entertainment for millions of people that watch you play football, and they pay you for the privilege of getting to watch you play football. And who cares about your political leanings, right? Who cares? Just show up, be part of the team, do your job, get paid, and then when you're at home, behind your doors, you can run around and burn the American flag. Who cares, right? Just, you know, do your job. Because there are people. If the NFL put out a list and said, you remember that movie with Mark Wahlberg where, what was the name of it, where he was the
trying out for the Green Bay Packers?
No, Philadelphia Eagles.
Was it the Eagles? Okay, yeah, I remember that movie. I don't remember the name.
It's a true story. Yes. It's a true story about this guy. He's a football player, you know, college, and he was basically working in a bar, and he does a walk-on tryout for the Philadelphia Eagles, and gets picked up and plays. I mean, if you put out a call today and said, look, anybody that wants to come play, we're just going to scrap this. We're going to start all over. Just if anybody wants to show up and play professional football, show up here. We're going to give you a shot. What is it?
Invincible.
Thank you. We're going to give you a shot. Look, there would be millions of people out there lined up to take a shot at being a professional football player, a hockey player, baseball player, et cetera. Because, A, it's amazing. Right, you get to play a sport that you love for a living and get paid a lot of money for it. And so when people take these opportunities and literally throw them away, it just absolutely amazes me. Because again, you know, we've had this conversation here on the show now for the last ongoing several months about this rise in socialism, these socialistic ideas in America, and how capitalism is horrible, capitalism is broken, you know, and you know, just, you know, it just sucks that 1% of the population has more wealth than the bottom 50% of the population. I get it, right? And then you have these idiots that throw away opportunities to be in the top 1%. It just floors me. But this is the point that goes back to the importance of understanding how capitalism ultimately works, which is, you know, it's interesting this weekend. So I tweeted out this picture about my wife and the 12-foot Christmas tree. And this guy tweeted me back. He says, well, I just can't get over the, you know, he says, I keep looking at the tree, but I can't get over the nice house. And I tweeted him back. when I tweeted you back, I said, yeah, it's been 30 years of hard work, working 100-hour-plus weeks, saving, budgeting, investing properly, sacrificing, you know, doing without, et cetera. And I put hashtag overnight success, right? You know, these things don't occur for most people. You have to work at it. And every day it's a challenge to go out and work and save and invest and not make mistakes.
It doesn't happen by accident.
No, it doesn't. But when you have people like Colin Kaepernick, mm-hmm. who have an opportunity, I mean, again, what amazed me is that after 3 years and all the shenanigans which got him out of the NFL to start with. Okay, so first of all, he's not that great of a quarterback. But the second thing is that he pulled all these shenanigans with the national anthem, and people are going, hey, you know what? I need team players. I don't need individuals. This is the whole point of being a team. You know, and so he's out of the NFL for 3 years, has an opportunity. 28 teams are showing up to give you a shot, man. And you throw it away?
Colin Kaepernick's purpose will be, hey, kids, don't be like Colin. You know?
Yeah, but, you know, it's interesting that there's all these shirts out now. It's like, I stand with Colin, blah, blah, blah. What do you stand on him? What are you standing with Colin on exactly?
Mm-hmm.
Right? I stand with Colin. Great. About what? Being a complete idiot? Because you just threw away a multi-million-dollar opportunity that anybody would give their left arm to have that shot at? I mean, what exactly are you standing with Colin on? You know, this is, and so when we complain about capitalism, there are people like Colin Kaepernick which are the root of the problem. So it distorts the view about how capitalism actually works. You know, you take a look at a lot of the guys that play in the NFL. Yeah, they have a lot of raw talent. There is an innate amount of raw talent in these people that play in the NFL. You know, take our hometown hero here, J.J. Watt, right? Guy has an innate ability to be a great football player. But he doesn't just show up and play the game. That guy works out every day. He puts in the time. He's working out when people have already gone home for the day. He puts the time and the effort in to be at the top of his game. That's part of the job. But it's also what is required to be at the top of the game. These guys just don't show up and get in the NFL or the NBA or the Major League Baseball. These guys put in the time and the effort and the work, and they train relentlessly to be at the top of their game. These things aren't given to them. They work at it. And this is the whole point about capitalism. Capitalism isn't a given. Capitalism is not something you just show up and it gives you money. Capitalism is a function of hard work and sacrifice and dedication and effort and overcoming obstacles. And when you get knocked down, you get up again, and you get knocked down again, you get up again. That's what capitalism is. But by building it and by participating in it, you can build wealth. But it's not just going to happen overnight. Be right back after the break.
Got questions for Lance later? Ask now at realinvestmentadvice.com.
2019 is drawing to a close. Get ready for a successful 2020 with RIA Advisor's free financial planning tool, MyBlocks. It's our online modular manager for your money and your life. Does your vision of retirement match up to reality? MyBlocks can help to determine how much you'll need and how you can achieve it. What worries you about your money? Create your own personal financial vision for the next decade with MyBlocks, our free tool at RIAAdvisors.com. Click on the client portal tab, RIAAdvisors.com.
And welcome back, 6:48 on this morning's edition of the Real Investment Show. I'm your host, Lance Roberts. So, you know, we've been watching this, what's been going on with housing around the country, and importantly in states like California, New York, Florida, you know, kind of the hotbed of housing prices. And it was interesting because, you know, out in California, we saw you know, housing prices, you know, elevate very, very rapidly. And as particularly as interest rates came down, mortgage rates came down, it's not surprising you see this kind of bidding war starting up in California. And it was interesting because I actually talked on the show about this, I guess, maybe a year ago now. And we were talking about on the show that it's amazing to me because, you know, after in 2007, I was here on the show. And we were talking about all these home flipping shows that you saw on television. I go, this has got to kind of mark a top in the housing market, right? When you have, you know, all these shows on, it is on HGTV, Bravo, you know, five different channels, and they're all just chock full of how to flip a house, how to buy a house, how to renovate it and flip it, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I said, this has to kind of, you know, potentially mark the top of a market when you see this much interest in flipping houses and doing these type of things. About a year ago, I'm on the show here saying, you know, hey, they're all back, right? We have all these house flipping shows, how to buy a house, rent a house, you know, whatever it is, back on the show. And your advertisements on the radio about, you know, I'm so-and-so from HGTV, you know, I'm coming to Houston to give a seminar on, you know, whatever it is, about how to flip a house. And, you know, when you see that type of psychology in any market, you know, the housing market or the stock market, et cetera, you always have to try to assume that you're probably closer to the peak of the cycle than not. When everybody's, by the time that everybody's trying to do something, right, when your local cash register guy's, you know, talking about buying houses and flipping them or, you know, you're... go down to the nail salon to get your nails done and your tech is telling you about the latest stock that she's buying or whatever. You got to kind of, you know, think about by the time the average person realizes there's an opportunity to make money, those are the last guys usually into the system, right? The guys that are in early, which are generally the guys that have capital and are kind of, you know, watching for opportunity, are willing to step in and buy stuff when nobody else wants it, you know, those are the guys that really make the money. By the time the average person gets into it, it's generally way, way too late. You're at the end of a cycle. And so it's interesting because when you take a look at the market, the financial markets as an example, stock prices, all-time highs, everybody's very giddy and excited. And, you know, they're talking about, you know, we're in the next great bull market, right? This is just, we're 10 years into a bull market and you're just now starting to come to the realization there's something going on in the market. There was a great headline out this morning is that stocks on track, this is a headline, stocks on track to build on records as investors remain optimistic on US-China trade talks. We've been talking about trade with China for 20 months. We haven't got any deals done. And now we're doing a deal that's at best just a get it off the table deal. This is not even a real trade deal. This is simply just trying to get the thing off the table. You didn't solve anything. But the market is right now is like, oh, I know I'm told there's now trade talks, so maybe I better go buy stocks. You're late. Housing market, same exact way. I mean, you take a look at what's going on in California as an example. You know, housing prices are dropping rapidly to find buyers. Look, and prices in real estate are just like the stock market. It's all about supply and demand. And it's interesting because there's all these articles about, well, the reason the house prices are going up is because we got a shortage of housing. No, we don't have a shortage of housing. There is never a shortage of housing. Why do you know that? Because the home builders all around the country build to supply. Right. And if there's demand, they're going to build houses. They're going to buy property and they're going to build houses. And so there is always an ability for companies to build houses. Right. So there is not a housing shortage. What there is a shortage of is people buying houses versus renting houses. And what happened after the financial crisis is that major hedge funds, mutual funds, investor groups, et cetera, all went out and bought up houses that were in foreclosure and flipped them all into rentals. And then that's caught on now to where other people with money are buying houses and renting them out. In fact, we have more renters in this country than at just about any other point in history. And there's also a changing mentality about housing and house ownership. Millennials are coming up going, I don't want to own a house. Don't blame you, right? There is no value. And this is one of the things that was one of the things that led up to the financial crisis was this idea that houses are part of your financial assets. No, they're not. Houses are an expense. They're costly to maintain. You pay taxes, and those taxes, the property taxes, are out of control. And we can't seem to rein those in at all. But by the time you pay property taxes, insurance, HOA fees, maintenance, upkeep, and you add all that stuff back in, and interest on your mortgage debt, add all that back in, and you subtract all that from your buy price and your sell price, odds are you probably didn't make any money in your house. And people are figuring that out. Look, I'm not saying you shouldn't own a home, right? I own a home. And why do I own a home? I bought a house because, A, it makes my wife happy. And every man knows you make your wife happy. Makes your life a whole lot easier. But the reason I own a home is I have four kids. And putting four kids, a wife, and two dogs into an apartment is just not realistic. So I bought a house because it fit my family's lifestyle. And there's nothing, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with owning homes. So don't take what I'm saying wrong and say, well, I'm advocating you should never own a home. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying you should own a home if you can afford it and it fits your lifestyle and that's what you want. You're going to stay there for a while and those type of things. But you should never buy a house based on the idea that it's an asset and that it's going to make you a bunch of money. It's not. Not at the end of the day. Yes, you may buy it for $100,000. You may sell it for $150,000. And you go, look, I made $50,000 on it. But you go add up all everything else you spent on the house. In the process of that, you probably didn't make any money. But see, we never do that, right? We just look at the buy and the sell price and go, we made money. And we never look at this as to the impact on our financial net worth. And the problem for a lot of people is they are house rich, cash poor. And they can't build wealth. They buy too much house because I can buy too much house because of low interest rates. And then I have to pay higher property taxes, higher maintenance upkeep, et cetera. And yes, I've got this great house, but I'm living paycheck to paycheck and I can't build any wealth. Wealth is not the value of that of the house. If I sell the house, right, I buy a house for 100 10 years ago, and I sell it for 150 10 years later. Okay, forget all the other stuff. I now have $150,000. Great, I've built wealth, right? Well, I still have to have a place to live. And the cost of properties are no longer $100,000. They're now $200,000. So great, I can take the money and I can put it in my pocket and now I have wealth, but I have no place to live, or I have to go buy another house, which now costs me more. So houses are not an asset in the terms of creating wealth and creating prosperity. They are a utility. And I say this only from the standpoint, and look, there's going to be people argue with me about this, and yes, you can build wealth in real estate. I'm not saying that at all because I invest in real estate and yes, I create wealth from investing in real estate. I invest in the markets. I invest in a lot of things. I invest in businesses. I build wealth through investment. And yes, you can build wealth by investing in real estate. I'm talking about buying a house as an individual and buying too much house and destroying the ability to save and invest in other things that can make you wealth over time. So this is all about keeping balance, right? This is all about balance. And the important thing is about understanding when you are able to afford to acquire real estate, where it is a functional piece of your overall net worth. You know, people running out in their 20s to buy a house, it's a terrible idea. Rent, learn what's going on, save money, understand how the environment works. And besides, when you're young, you're going to move around a lot. You're going to get different jobs. You're going to meet people. You're going to move places. Don't get tied down to a house. Don't make that financial mistake. And particularly buying houses at the peak of cycles has very long-term negative consequences, particularly if the housing market's turned down. The rate of bidding wars in metro areas around the country are dropping dramatically. In fact, bidding on houses has completely dried up, and now prices are being cut just to try to find buyers. In other words, it's now becoming a buyer's market, which is good. So if you're actually looking to buy a house in the next year or so, you're probably going to have a really great opportunity because prices are going to come down to find buyers. And we're seeing this occur around the country. And this is part of what leads up to recessions. This is part of what leads up in economic slowdowns. And just something to understand about this, right? So the point is again, is that, you know, understanding real estate, personal real estate, the house you live in, is different than investing in real estate as an investment. And those two should not be confused. Your house is not a financial asset. It is a utility. It is something you have to live in, and it's something you pay for to live in. Investing in real estate as an investment is something entirely different, and you can't confuse those two. Anyway, that wraps up the show for the day. Be sure to go by the website. We have an article out this morning on the bull market about where we are in it, and is this the next great bull market? It's on the website now, realinvestmentadvice.com. Also, we've got a lot of videos and commentaries. We've got some podcasts coming up, all at our website, realinvestmentadvice.com. And don't forget to get our latest newsletter. It's on the website now at realinvestmentadvice.com. Stick around. Chris Salcedo is coming right up. If I had a little money, it's a rich man's world. It's a rich man's world.